Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's program of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of the show, and I am also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network. This is an interesting show for me today in particular. It is actually June 10th, and we are going to air this show 1 month later in July 9th. And we have got Jeannie Mines on the show today, and I'll get to that in just a second. But what I want to let you know about is that the UR Tennis Network is a tennis network that was started about 4 years ago. We're excited that you're listening in today, and this network is a complement to the tennis channel, to the other tennis networks out there. We strive every week to get you an interview that you probably would not normally hear about through our avenues that we have connections with. We have three shows currently on the air. We have Parenting Aces, which starts Monday, and it begins at 11 o'clock Eastern Time, or Central Time, sorry, at 12 o'clock Eastern Time. And then we have, and that's hosted by Lisa Stone, and then we have American Tennis with Coach Chuck Creasy. And Chuck comes on right before me on Wednesdays. And he talks about the issues facing American tennis. And then there's me, and I come on and talk about college tennis. And we try every week to bring you a great college interview with a college coach from the American collegiate system. I'm a former college coach of about 20 years. And my program was suspended in 2011, and that's when this radio show came about for me. Our group as a whole is a group of passionate individuals, and we each week come on, and we strive to bring you the tennis interview of important tennis people that you're not going to hear about from most networks. And I'm always looking for other people that want to talk about tennis. So if you're one of those people that can come and talk an hour's worth of tennis, and you believe that you can do it for an extended period of time, then we would love to have you come on. You can get in touch with me via the email, and that is jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. And Coach Mines, if you're out there, just hang on just a second, and I will get you in just a little bit. But we're always looking for people that can, you know, bring in some great interviews, talk tennis, and we're always working on great shows. I'm with anyone out there that has a passion for tennis. So just just get in touch with me. Reach out, and we'll talk. I'm always the person that follows up. So, I think that does it, and I finally got connected here via the Internet. As I always say, the wonders of modern technology. So let me see if I've got Coach Mines on the air here. Hi, Coach Mines, are you there?
I'm here. How's everybody doing?
Very good. Very good, Jenny. I'm so glad to have you on the show today. You are the hardest person I've ever had to pursue. For my radio show, that's definitely.
Well, I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're gonna have a great time today. I've promoted you several times, and I was saying earlier that this is, you know, one of the weirder interviews for me because we're recording this ahead of time, and there's a lot going on, there has been a lot going on with college at tennis, And when we air this, there's really not going to be much going on. So it'll be a fun day today.
Well, I think it will, too. I'm looking forward to it, and I appreciate you having me on.
So, Jenny, you know, and I say this each week, there are going to be people that listen to my show on a regular basis that are going to say today, Jenny Mines, I have no idea who she is, where she came from. So why don't we start with that? Why don't you give us a little bit of biographical information about yourself, and we'll just start with that.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jason. Well, I am a native Texan, born and raised in Texas. Been passionate about tennis from a very young age. Started playing when I was 6 years old, mainly because my older sister played, and whatever she did, I wanted to do. And that still holds true a long time later. But she was actually a very good tennis player. Her name is Susan Mines, and she played college tennis. And we were fortunate enough to have the opportunity to play high school tennis together in San Antonio for John Peterson, whom I'm sure obviously you know well, and I'm sure many of the listeners know Coach Peterson well. And Coach Peterson is the reason why I'm in coaching today. He just made such a vast impact in my life, not just as a tennis player, but as a human being. And I think really challenged me and encouraged me just to become a better person and a better player and now a better coach, better teammate. And my sister and I had we're blessed with the opportunity to play for Coach Peterson in high school at Winston Churchill High School in San Antonio. And we won a 5A state doubles title together back in 1985. Then I went on and my sister went and finished her college career at North Texas, but she played at Tyler Junior College for Robert Cox and won a national championship. And then I went on and played at University of Houston and graduated in 1991, played for the Cougs for 4 years, and we were ranked top 20 in the country. I think our highest ranking was around 17, and I was lucky enough to make the NCAA tournament at Stanford in doubles, and that's back when it was the Southwest Conference with all the Texas schools. And then my high school and college days kind of took me into what do I do next, and I kind of fell into coaching, and here I am 24 years later coaching collegiate tennis at the University of Alabama, and I've been just completed 17 years at Alabama, so I'm entering my 18th season. Kind of had an interesting pathway with my coaching. I stayed on as the assistant coach at Houston in my once I finished my undergraduate degree, I pursued an advanced degree and worked at Chancellor's Racquet Club in Houston and pursued a degree in exercise science and kinesiology. And I did that for a year, and then I went on and moved on and was an assistant coach at Florida State from 1992 to 1995 for 3 years. And then I went on to be the head coach at the University of Iowa back in 1995, and was there the lead with the Hawkeyes from 95 to 97 for 2 years. And then that kind of springboarded me into Alabama, where I took over June 1st of 1997. And so it's been a great career path. It's been really rewarding and really fortunate to be involved in tennis. I think it's one of the greatest sports you can play, and certainly afforded me a lot of opportunities. But I think growing up in Texas really helped pave the way and prepare me for playing competitively at every level, and including coaching at a competitive level here at Alabama, just because of the strength of the state and the strength of the tournaments. So it's been good to me, Jason. I'm very grateful for the chance to play and coach.
And Jenny, you had a great not only playing career but a coaching career as well. And we're going to get into that college career in just a little bit. I wanted to talk about that Winston Churchill experience and a little bit of how, you know, you and I have this connection with John Peterson, and I'll agree with you, he's a great coach. But this Texas high school system is a great system. This UIL system where you play team tennis. Can you kind of describe that for us just a little bit for the listeners and tell us why you like the UIL system with your sister?
Well, you know, Coach Peterson, the fortunate thing with the way that we were raised and the way we kind of learned how to play tennis was that it was a team environment, and that's what I have stuck with in all my years is that it's not – even though it is an individual sport, you know, we were taught, and Coach Peterson cultivated a very family-oriented environment and a very team-oriented environment. And so I've kind of kept that with me through all the years. But Texas tennis was so competitive. And you know, we had a men's boys and girls team together at Churchill, and then we competed against all the other 5A teams all over the state. We played district, and then we had regionals, and then we had state in Austin, Texas. And I believe it's a long time ago, so I'm trying to remember, but I believe we played six singles and three doubles, you know, the same way college tennis is now. And every match was worth a point, so it was worth nine points. And then, you know, you played with the men's team as well. And It was just a great atmosphere. You know, I can remember being at Pinnock Allison playing. I can remember being at, where they had the UIL. It was the intramural, the University of Texas intramural courts there in Austin. And I remember the UIL representatives being out there and, conducting the tournament, the state tournament, the team and the singles and doubles, which, you know, I got to play in both. But it was just a great experience. It was, you know, everybody enjoyed tennis. It was a spirited sport in high school tennis in Texas. You know, playing Abilene Cooper and Corpus Christi King and Austin High, and, you know, not just the schools in San Antonio, but we used to travel all over the state of Texas playing. And I remember going to Wichita Falls and Abilene, and we drove down to McAllen, you know, played a tournament down in the valley, and Edinburgh and McAllen. And I feel like we you know, crossed every place we could in Texas playing. We played in Dallas. We played at, TBRM, and we played at, all the spots growing up in San Antonio, McFarland Tennis Center, and down at Fair Oaks, and then, you just met so many great people. I think, you know, the Texas coaches were great. I think they really taught us, how to be a good sportsman and how to compete well. And, you know, I remember doing all kinds of clinics in San Antonio with all the other high school kids from all over San Antonio, like out at, you know, Northern Hills Racquet Club, or out at Northeast Independent School District at Blossom. And, you know, it was just, anybody that said tennis was not a big sport or a fun sport or, gosh, I don't know what they were thinking. I mean, it was just the greatest thing that ever happened to us. And, you know, in Texas, there's just so many people playing that everybody's teams, everybody's rosters were filled with, you know, state-ranked players. I think at one point at Churchill, all of the players on our team had some kind of a state ranking. I mean, it was very competitive and a lot of fun. So I have all good memories about my high school days and the way the UIL ran their tournaments. And I loved going to Austin to play. That was kind of the pinnacle of it all. But a lot of great memories.
Yeah, Jenny, the way I understand that Churchill team, those teams that Peterson was the head coach of, just dominating teams in the UIL system for years and years.
Well, it was. I feel like he had an empire. You know, Coach John Peterson, he just had an uncanny ability to bring people together and to just cultivate that team environment no matter, you know, how difficult, no matter what the personalities, no matter what the talent level. And that's a difficult task because in tennis, you know, number one is I think there's a lot of big egos and a lot of, you know, certainly a lot of talent and a lot of good players. But it's such an individual sport that, you know, then you have to kind of bring all the individuals together and say, hey, okay, now you're important, but your team is really more important. And we're going to put you down at number three because it's what's best for our team. And you know, it may not be necessarily that we're thinking of you first, but we're thinking of, you know, the team first. And, you know, John Peterson just had a way of making it all come together. I call it magic. I call it, you know, Coach Peterson magic. And he just had that ability to make teams better. To make you want to do anything, to push harder and push through, you know, for your teammates, for your school, for him, you know, for the Churchill Chargers. And, you know, it's interesting now because we all have a common bond, no matter how many years it's been and how long, you know, it has been since we haven't, you know, visited or connected. We all pick right up where we left off. And that's special because I don't think every team can do that. But, you know, he involved the families. He involved the parents. And all of our parents used to gather and make egg rolls to sell so that we could travel. And that was one of the major fundraisers that John Peterson, you know, did. I mean, everybody made egg rolls, and, man, they were good. they were good egg rolls. And all the moms would get together in you know, each other's kitchens and spend the whole day making egg rolls so that we could sell them and go play tournaments and buy skirts, you know. And one of the moms on our team made all of our handmade skirts. I mean, it's just, Jason, I'll tell you what, it's what made me want to keep playing tennis and stay in it for my lifetime, for my career.
And, Jenny, I've known that man for a long time, and I have never heard about the egg rolls.
You gotta ask him about them. I'm going to tell you something. They were delicious. You know, a lot of people did car washes.
It's San Antonio, Texas. Come on, it's San Antonio, Texas. That's the burritos. Come on. Egg rolls.
We should have done tacos or something, but I'm telling you, these egg rolls were delicious. I can remember freezing them and eating them forever. you need to call Peterson and ask him about it.
I will. Certainly will. Now, going to Churchill, I would imagine that you garnered a lot of exposure to Texas universities and other colleges. Gene, am I right about that? I mean, was U of H the only school that came calling, or were there others?
Well, you know, we did. We got to play at a lot of different schools. You know, I think we saw UT Pan Am when we were down in the Valley, and I can remember playing high school tournaments in College Station at Texas A&M on those grass. They're not really grass courts, but we called them grass courts because they had so many weeds growing on them, you know, back in the day. And, you know, that's back when Bobby Kleinicke, you know, coached at Bryan High School, and And we would go play tournaments in College Station, and Then we'd go play in Houston and in Dallas, and I don't think we ever played at TCU or SMU. But, you know, we did have a lot of exposure to all the Texas universities, even up in Lubbock and Abilene and, you know, up in the Panhandle some. But I was recruited, you know, if Peterson would have left for Tyler Junior College when I was graduating, I most assuredly would have gone with him. But he left the year after I graduated, so I was already, you know, at Houston and kind of established. But I took a recruiting trip to Arkansas. I took a recruiting trip to Texas A&M. Looked at North Texas a little bit. I did look at Tyler a little bit. Believe it or not, I looked at Alabama, which is, of course, where I am now. For some reason, I was really interested in Florida State. But I think in the end, I really didn't want to go too far from home. I just kind of wanted to go maybe about 3 or 4 hours from home. And Houston was a good fit for me. My doubles partner from high school, from juniors, went with me, Laura Hudson, and we were ranked number one in the state of Texas in doubles. We had won the Texas sectionals. And so, you know, that was kind of a big deal that we were going to college together, and Houston offered, you know, both of us that chance. So it was kind of the perfect fit to play in the Southwest Conference, to you know, be close to home, but yet not. At the time that I signed and committed to Houston, we had a great team. It was Kathy Foxworth and Stina Almgren and Vicky White, and we had a really good team. We had a lot of, you know, a lot of depth and a lot of talent. Candy DeProm, you probably remember Keith DeProm. His daughter Candy played with me, and Laura Hudson played there. She was a really good player out of Austin, Texas. And then Kristen Samuelson ended up coming to Houston. She went to UTSA for 1 year, and then she came and went to Houston. And then Cindy Crawford from Corpus. We ended up having a really good team. And a lot of great memories with playing at Houston in the Southwest Conference. You know, that was a big deal back in the day with all the Texas schools and then Arkansas. I'm sure you remember that conference well.
Yeah, it was a great conference. And, you know, in those days, U of H, that ladies' team was a very strong contender for that Southwest Conference title year in and year out.
Yeah, we were competitive. Out of my 4 years, we had two pretty good years. We had a year or two where we, I think, maybe didn't achieve what we had set out to, and you know, didn't quite probably meet the expectations of where we wanted to be. But, you know, we did have a good team. Kathy Foxworth was a standout player, very highly, you know, highly nationally ranked, and played the national indoors and NCAAs. And Stina Almgren actually went on to coach at Houston for quite a while and got the team up in the, you know, top 25, top 30, and she was an incredible player. And then we got a lot of really good Texas players, which is interesting because now their team is all international. But back when we played, I mean, we had, I would say more than half the team was actually from Texas.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun.
Now, you know, I'm curious, when you played there at U of H, did you do a lot of traveling, or did you play a lot of Texas schools? How did that work at the time for you, Jenny?
Yeah, we did. We played a lot of Texas schools, and you know, of course, we traveled to play all of the Southwest Conference rivals. Went up to Arkansas to play and played at SMU and TCU, Baylor, Texas Tech. We played at Sam Houston. We played at Rice. We went and played in San Antonio at Trinity. We played up, like I said, went up to Lubbock and played Texas Tech. We always played Southwest Texas, and we played them in San Marcos. I don't remember playing North Texas. We played mostly Texas schools, but we actually did play Alabama my senior year. We went up to Florida State to play in Tallahassee. We played at Furman in the Furman Fall Classic in Greenville, South Carolina. I mean, we played a really good schedule. We played out in California. We played out in Las Vegas. So, you know, I mean, it was a great chance to go and travel the United States and do something that you love doing. And that's why I think tennis provides so many great opportunities.
Jenny, as you were a player there at the university level, did you start to kind of discover that you had a desire to be a coach, or did that come after you graduated?
Yeah, I think I kind of did. You know, I was captain of my team, I believe, 3 out of my 4 years. I think my sophomore through senior year, I was a team captain. And, you know, oftentimes I kind of take the younger players sort of under my wing, or, you know, take them home for Thanksgiving if they didn't have a place to go. And, again, you know, I think there's kind of two things that sort of stemmed from. And one is being a middle child out of 5, which, you know, helped me kind of learn that, you know, to be a team player and a family player, and to look out after my little brothers. And then I think, too, then carrying on and going to play for Coach Peterson, you know, again, he just cultivated that kind of atmosphere with every decision that he made. So, yeah, I mean, I think I started, you know, enjoying not looking after the players. I wouldn't say that, but I kind of thought, you know, I love tennis. It's a great sport, but it's a great industry. There's so many neat people in coaching. There's so many neat people in tennis, and it's, you know, I think everybody has a lot of commonalities. I feel like tennis players are very academically driven. They seem to come from, you know, oftentimes, you know, just very stable environments and just very ambitious people, very eager, and not to say that other sports are not like that. But I don't know, I kind of found my niche, and then an opportunity presented itself, and I pounced on it and kind of ran with it from there. Never looked back.
Yeah, now, you graduated from U of H in 91, is that right?
Mm-hmm, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 91 to 97, in your neophyte college coaching tennis adventure here, I mean, was this just kind of a climb the ladder type process for you?
Yeah, you know, Jason, it was and it is. It still is. And that's kind of, I don't know why, I think everybody takes on a different kind of persona with the, whether as a player, you know, or a role on a team or a coach. But I think my role has always been to build, just a blue-collar worker, blue-collar mentality, build, you know, work ethic, just kind of gritty. I was that way as a player. I wouldn't say that I was not talented. I think I was athletic and certainly had some talent, but I would not say that that's how I was successful. I would definitely say it was because I was worked very, very hard, 7 days a week. I always tell my team now that all the hard work is done Monday through Friday. And so I think as a coach, I just have that mentality of building, putting one good day on top of another, putting one good match on top of another, putting one good season on top of another. And I love that mentality. You know, I love the mentality of getting a hammer and a nail and you know, having ownership in the construction of the house. And you know, I think Peterson gave us that ownership even in high school, you know, to some degree. And then I coach that way now. I give my players a lot of ownership, and I want their input, and I want them to feel like they're building something very special that will last forever, you know, and that's their legacy. And I've just always kind of had that mindset.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it, Jenny. I don't think that there are enough college coaches out there, and I'm talking all divisions, that really get that ownership principle.
Yeah. Well, I think it's way to do it. I just feel like, and not, that's not to say that there's not other great ways to do it, but I feel like if somebody has, you know, a dog in the fight, if they have some ownership, and you actually challenge them to, you know, to contribute and to outline their goals. And matter of fact, right now we're doing player meetings with all of our players. And, you know, I give them kind of a list of things that I want to discuss with them and provoke thought with in the end of the season meetings. But a lot of it is them coming in and giving me feedback and telling me what they think was really good and what they want to change or how they want to move on and improve and how I can help them or, you know, if there's something that we need to do better or differently. And that's not to say that you hand the reins over and say, you know, here, we'll do whatever you want. It's not like that, but it's just you can't do that. But, you know, I feel like they're more committed, they're more eager, they buy in more if they feel like they have a voice, or if they feel like they're heard, or if they feel like they're their goals and not just your goals. I think, you know, as coaches, sometimes we have our agenda, we have our goals in mind for each respective player for our team, but, you know, if they don't believe it or they don't buy into it or they're not committed to it, then it's not going to happen. They've got to be on board. So you got to be clever. You got to get them on board.
Yeah, I had one of my great mentors early on, and we were talking about programs early on, and I don't know if it was he or I, that I think it was myself, it was young buck at the time, and I mentioned, you know, something about my program, and he shut me up real fast, and he said, Jason, it is never, ever my program, or, you know, it is always our program. He said, you will never own it. You have to remember that it is the schools, it is the players, and, you know, and he was emphasizing that team type of feeling to it and that ownership of not being just a dictator, but, you know, of really, you know, like you say, Jenny, owning it and not being a dictator.
Right. Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that, because, you know, coaching is always changing, and I'm sure just like everything else, you know, it's kind of the bell curve, you know, analogy. I mean, you have to keep trying to figure out ways to be effective, because you want to be effective. And you just said it. It's not your team, it's not my team, it's our team. And we all, I always say it's a potluck dinner and everybody's bringing something, you know, and what you may bring maybe complements what I bring or vice versa, but everybody's got to bring something, you know, whether it's an appetizer or, you know, the main course or dessert or whatever, but everybody's got to feel really confident and really good about what they bring, because, you know, you and I both know that any good team, it's not the heroes, you know. It's not, you know, Michael Jordan. You look at the Bulls and you say, man, that was maybe the best time. And, you know, the NBA, they were a dynasty, and they were. But, you know, there's four other guys on the court with them, and then there's probably, you know, seven or eight other guys on the bench. And, you know, that analogy, you're only as good as your bench. I mean, everybody's got to understand their role and take pride in it, and understand it, embrace it, respect it, and that's how good you're going to be, is if you can get everybody, you know, working together and playing together, and even the ones that aren't in the lineup. And you know what it is? It's kind of just being not clever or savvy, but just being, you know, sometimes as coaches, I think you have to kind of check your ego at the door as well and listen.
Yeah. I agree with that, Jenny. Now, 1997, I mean, that has to be a dream interview, dream call. What was it?
Yeah, it really was. You know, I was excited but nervous and you know, filled with all the excitement of what could come out of it. And, you know, the premier SEC. I mean, you know, the Floridas and the Georgias and the Tennessees and Vanderbilts and, you know, gosh, Kentucky and Auburn, you know, a lot of the powers, you know, especially in men's and women's tennis. I mean, the SEC is as good as it gets. I mean, the most competitive premier women's tennis conference in the country. And so I was nervous and excited all together. But, you know, I when I got to campus and I got to the University of Alabama and I had the chance to, you know, go through the campus and, you know, I interviewed on May 8th of 97, and I'll never forget it. When I got to campus, you know, it was quiet and exams were just finishing up, so there weren't a lot of students on campus. And, you know, I really only got to meet a couple of the players because they weren't around. And you know, so it's an interesting – I really didn't know what to expect. I knew that it was going to be a good program and obviously a very good school. But, Jason, I don't know if you know the story, but by the time I actually – between May 8th and June 1st when I took the job, the team was decimated practically between injuries and a player that decided she didn't want to play anymore. The number one player transferred to Florida. We had a player have shoulder surgery. We had a player have ACL surgery. And I ended up having four players on my team in my first year. I mean, it was you know, I kind of walked in thinking I'm taking over the University of Alabama. We're going to be, you know, top 15 in the country, if not better. And by the time I got here and we started school, I mean, I had four players, and I was going to PE classes and sorority classes, recruiting people that had high school experience to come play on our varsity tennis team. So it was very humbling. And in my first season at Alabama, we went 0-21. And yeah, it was very challenging. And then my second year we won five matches, and my third year we won seven matches. And being on the hot seat wouldn't even describe where I was. So it's been a long journey. You know, I guess the moral of that story is you don't always know what you're kind of walking into, but, you know, that's kind of back to my whole build concept or philosophy. You know, we've had to build this from the ground up. So it's been very challenging, but, you know, yet very rewarding.
Jenny, did you have any apprehension? I got to ask this. Any apprehension of going to school with the elephant as a mascot?
Yeah, people didn't quite understand that, and Jason, I don't know that I really did either. But what's even more confusing is that people always say, "Why? Okay, you have an elephant, but then you're called the Crimson Tide. That doesn't make sense." So it is kind of interesting. The elephant is kind of the analogy that we in one of the early Rose Bowls. They said that the radio commentators said that the line looked like a herd of elephants, just their size and their, you know, they just kind of paraded around together and so forceful and, you know, mammoth and looked like elephants. And then that's kind of one story. And then the whole Crimson Tide is that, again, in one of the big bowl games, might have even been the Rose Bowl, they said it just looked like a crimson wave, just almost a tidal wave of crimson, because Alabama has always traveled well and always been so spirited. I mean, they are loyal fans to the, you know, as long as the day is. They just very vivacious and committed, spirited fans. So, and that's good.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah.
So, Jenny, before we get into the season, let's talk about Alabama just for a little bit. How many students at the university?
Well, we've grown dramatically since I got here in 97. it's more than doubled in size. So we're up close to 35,000. It's great representation from all over the country, really all over the world. Texas is actually our third, our third largest region that we recruit from. Georgia, obviously Alabama being first, but Georgia is quite big. California, actually we get a lot of students from the California area. But Texas, we get a ton of students and student athletes from Texas. But it's a big school now. It wasn't, years ago, but, it's grown. Everything's advanced here from facilities, resources, the campus, all of the, just the arenas, and, of course, the football stadium seats, over 102,000. So, I mean, it's big, and it's growing.
Now, let's talk about your facilities. What type of facilities do you have, Denny?
Well, I think we have the best in the country, Jason. And I say that honestly. We've got 12 varsity courts, a 12 varsity court stadium, and it's designed much like the Texas A&M stadium. And Texas A&M got their design from Florida State, which is the Scott Spiker tennis stadium. So it's a 1,000-seat stadium, and, of course, there's two banks of six on each respective side with the elevated seating in the middle. And then we've got a brand-new, we just finished year number three in our new Roberta Allison Baumgartner indoor tennis facility, where we have six very nice, just spacious, great courts, DecoTurf. We have DecoTurf indoors and outdoors, Musco lighting. And I always say when we play a night match, it's like we're lighting up Tuscaloosa, the city. I mean, it's just great lighting. So we're fortunate. We should be hosting the NCAA championships. We need to get the bid together so we can do it in the next 5 years.
That's what I was going to ask. Is there a chance that you guys will put in a bid for that?
Yeah, there is. We've got some work to do before we can put the bid out, and that entails getting live scoring on every court and getting more scoreboards on our what we consider our practice side. But I mean, we resurface our courts about every 3 years, and we've got the 12 varsity outdoor, but we also have 12 recreational courts that are in great shape that are about 2 minutes away from our varsity courts. So, I mean, it's a great place to host. And, we would pack the stands. I mean, people in Tuscaloosa are just so committed to the university. I mean, we average, I would say, about 300 to 350 fans per match. And if it's a big match, an SEC match or, a national event, we'll get 500, 600, 700 fans. They support us.
Now, Jenny, you're a fully funded program with 8 full scholarships. Do you carry 8 athletes, or do you carry more than that?
No, we generally just carry 8 just because, there's so many scholarships in women's tennis on the women's side. And, I feel like most people can find a good program where they can kind of fit in and play. So I think sometimes it's hard to walk-ons happy. It's not to say that they can't make an impact at play, because they can and they do, but I just feel like there's just too many opportunities. So, we generally carry 8, and we're allowed to travel 8 in the SEC.
And do you have an assistant coach and a graduate assistant?
I have a full-time assistant coach, and then we're allowed a volunteer assistant coach who is not allowed to be paid or have benefits. So I have a full-time volunteer assistant coach as well. So we've got 3. Uh-huh.
I see. Now, you've got 25 dates at the NCAA Division I level. Do you use them all in the course of your year?
We do. We have 25 dates. We generally use 4 in the fall and 21 in the spring, and we do use all of them. And you know, you kind of get a little bit of a break. Like, for instance, if you qualify for the national team indoors, then by virtue of qualifying through the IPA kickoff weekend, you don't have to count the indoors as dates. And so you kind of get a little bit of a break here and there with dates. But, you know, in the fall, it's a developmental time. You know, lots of matches, lots of repetition, finding doubles combinations, and really just getting a lot of quality match play and working on your game, fine-tuning things and, you know, making adjustments from the summer, the season before. And then the spring is go time. It's dual match season, you know, pretty much one dual match a day, although a lot of places are doing double headers. We don't do a whole lot of double headers just because I think it's pretty tough on the girls. So that's kind of how that works.
You mentioned you use four of your dates in the fall. Where do you go in the fall, Jeannie?
We have been playing the Duke tournament up in Cary, North Carolina. It's a great event. Jamie Ashworth, the Duke coach, does a really good job. It's a lot of top-ranked schools from Duke, UNC, Virginia, Texas, Northwestern, Texas A&M, Miami, and then just kind of a mix of other schools. And then we played the Furman Fall Classic in Greenville. I played that as a player, and it's a great, great tournament. And that's a lot of good schools. That's Florida State, Vanderbilt, Iowa, South Carolina, Clemson. So we get to see kind of some different schools there. Then we go out and play the All-American Championships in Los Angeles, and that's a national event, a Grand Slam, but that's qualification only, so you have to qualify to play that. And then we play the regionals for the Southern region, and that's all of Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. And the winner of the regional then, by virtue of claiming the title, goes and gets a bid to the National Indoors, which is in New York in November. So that's another national event, the National Indoors, and that's played at the U.S. Open in Flushing. But, of course, that's by qualification only also. And then we host a big tournament named after Roberta Allison, and we've got about 20 schools that play that tournament, from Vanderbilt to Tennessee, Ole Miss, Auburn, Northwestern, Michigan, Middle Tennessee State, Tulane. We even have Loyola Marymount coming from California. So it's kind of it's a real nice tournament. We try to kind of model it after the Furman tournament, and it's just quality matches, a lot of quality matches in a weekend. And then that kind of wraps up our fall season. So, you know, sometimes you have 5 dates, but most of the girls just play 4.
Jenny, are you one of these college coaches that allows your players to play in these futures, these USTA events, kind of semi-pro events?
Yeah, you know, we do. We allow it and we promote it, and I think we're kind of moving a little bit more that direction. That is up to them if they want to do it. I set the college schedule of some really, really good college tournaments. So, for instance, all of the tournaments that we're playing in, we're going to be playing a lot of nationally ranked singles players, doubles teams, and then teams. So there's a lot of opportunities in the fall, and you can really get your ranking up. There's two out of the 4 Grand Slams are actually, you know, placed and located in the fall season. But then in addition to that, you know, there's a couple 10Ks and 25Ks in the fall that, you know, some of our players have played. You know, there was one in Troy in Alabama, Troy, Alabama. There's one in the spring in Dothan that we've had players play. There's one in Pelham, Alabama. It's a 25K. And then there's some other 10Ks. And a lot of times our players will play those in the summertime, or they'll play them over the holidays. So that's permissible, and you can add those to your, you know, to your college schedule as well.
Now that spring season starts, Jeannie, after the fall has concluded, did you get a sense that this year's team was going to be special?
Yeah, I did, Jason. I mean, I just, you know, it's kind of funny, though. In saying that, I'll kind of speak out of both sides of my mouth. I mean, at one point, I wasn't sure. We were struggling in September and October, and we weren't really coming together as a team the way that I thought we should be. But, you know, it's just like what we talked about earlier in the show. You have to give it time. Things don't happen overnight. And, you know, you have to give the team time to gel, because every year, no matter who's on your team, no matter how good you are, you're starting over. I mean, it's new chemistry, new dynamics, new team, new obstacles, new challenges. And it's going to forever be that way. So, you know, you kind of have to be patient and you know, you have to get your older players to do a good job leading and setting the tone and setting the way. But you kind of, sometimes, I mean, you cultivate the team atmosphere, but you also have to let things unfold a little bit. And so it took us a while. And I wouldn't be dishonest with you. There was a time or two where I thought, oof, I hope this comes together. But then when we started, you know, playing and competing in January, boy, we started really getting things going. And little by little, we got better. And that was kind of the sort of the theme for the season, is that, you know, it was like putting brick layers on top of each other. We just kind of kept building and getting better. When I say that, I don't just mean, you know, competing in forehands and backhands. I mean our team chemistry, the way we related to each other, the way we communicated, the way we responded to a loss, the way we responded to a win, you know, the way we responded to people not being in the lineup. You know, I mean, it was just, you know, it was really special. Who would have thought? I mean, we went into the NCAA tournament, you know, number two in the country, and I shouldn't say who would have thought, but I can surely tell you that in August I would not have thought that.
Yeah.
We were not anywhere near where we wanted to be, but I think that's a testament to the team being diligent with sticking together, playing for each other, being good to each other, working out kind of kinks as we went along, and you know, we just kept kind of getting better in the areas where we needed to through the course of the season.
And Judy, how do you utilize the indoor season? Is that a team building? Are you evaluating? I mean, because you're not typically going to play indoors much for the year. So how do you utilize that as the top coach?
Well, you know, the fall is a really important time, and it's a carryover from the summer. So, you know, I just sent my team literally on Sunday an email, and the title of the email was, "The time will come when the season will ask what you were doing all summer." and then you know, the first quote in the email was, "I never left the field saying I could have done more to get ready, and that gives me peace of mind." And that's from Peyton Manning, who we all know is probably one of the most well-prepared and smartest and hardest-working quarterbacks that will ever play in the NFL. My point is just that there's no time to rest, and that's, I think, for college players and for coaches. I think you have to rest in terms of, you know, striking balance in your life, and you can't push full throttle all the time, but you can't put your rackets away as a coach or a player, and you've got to use that fall time to develop. So we do a lot of individuals in the fall. We do a lot of small group practices, a lot of one-on-one work. We'll do a lot of video work. And that's, you know, I would definitely say that the fall is a developmental time period, no question.
Now, the NCAA kind of mandated ITA mandated a couple of scoring changes. How, as one of the top coaches, did you approach those, and did you like them?
Well, you know, you have to be open-minded. I cannot tell you that I liked it from the beginning, and I'm still, you know, I'm still kind of, you know, easing my way into some of the new concepts, no ad scoring, which really is not a new concept, but it's new to, you know, to these players, and you know, I played no ad when I played college tennis, so it's not necessarily new to me, but it's different. you know, puts a different emphasis on you know, the points and the games and how you're going to play them. And, you know, the serve becomes more important. The return becomes really important. The way you, you know, set your points up and the way you get into a game. So it is different. But, you know, the game, I'm not going to say the game is changing necessarily, but our sport is, you know, some of our matches last 5 and 6 hours. And the reality of it is that most people don't have 5 or 6 hours to go at a women's tennis match, even though I think it's good stuff and high quality. So you kind of have to be open-minded to some things that are going to be good for tennis in general and good for fans and good to grow the sport. So, you know, I'm on board with you know, trying to be relevant and trying to be proactive to get more marketing out there, get more people to matches. Obviously without losing the integrity of the sport. So, you know, we'll still play 2 out of 3 sets, but we'll play no ad scoring. And then in doubles, you know, it's still up for discussion as to whether or not we're going to play 6-game sets or 8-game sets. And that, I'm on the operating committee, and we do a lot of deliberation on that, but it has not necessarily been decided for sure what, you know, what we're going to go with. And we're still figuring it out because we're trying to stay in, you know, conjunction with the USTA and with what the pros are doing. But we're also trying to figure out what's great for college tennis. And then how are we going to keep getting, you know, players to go on and play pro tennis? But how are we going to keep getting more fans to our matches? And it's tough. It's tricky. You know, most people don't have that much time in their day to go sit at the tennis courts.
Yeah. Well, Jenny, we get into March and April, and this is where I realized that Alabama's having a great year. I better get in touch with Jenny Mines. We got to get this gal on the program. And, man, oh, man, do you ever start to become a hard woman to catch?
Yeah, the season picked up a lot of speed. You know, we hosted the kickoff in January. We won that, beat Oklahoma in a dogfight, found our way into the national indoors in February, went 1-2. We lost to Southern Cal 4-3, beat Texas 4-1, turned around and lost to top 10 Virginia 4-1, came back home, middle of February, played Virginia again at home. They were ranked top 10. We beat them 4-3. That turned our season around. That match turned our season around. To beat a quality team 4-3 that we had just lost to less than a week before, I feel like that match gave us a lot of confidence, a lot of momentum. We go into the Blue-Gray into February. We win the Blue-Gray for the first time in history. We beat Rice in the finals, a very good top 20, top 21 Rice team. Elizabeth Schmidt does a great job at Rice, very good team. And then we start conference play. And, you know, our first 4 matches, we win 4-0. Mississippi State, Ole Miss, LSU, Arkansas, we claim a 4-0, you know, win and get off a really fast, convincing start to the SEC season. Then we beat Auburn at Auburn 4-2. And then we beat a tough South Carolina team in the middle of March. And then toward the end of March, we play Florida at home and play the college match day format where you play singles first. And then if the doubles is forced, you play it. And it's 10-point match tiebreakers for the third. Well, we beat Florida for the first time in program history, and you know, catapulted to the top. You know, I think we catapulted to 4 in the country after that. But then we turn around and lose a tough one to Vanderbilt on the road, 4-2, and then rebounded with big wins over Kentucky, Texas A&M, Missouri, and then beat Georgia at home in front of about 400 fans. To claim at least part of the SEC title. And then last match of the season, SEC match, we claim the whole title ourselves by beating Tennessee, you know, at Tennessee 4-0 and claim the SEC championship for the first time in program history. Well, I mean, it was just, we kind of got into a steamroll mentality where if we got the lead and we got the doubles point, we just picked up so much momentum that it was really hard to stop us. And I don't mean that at all in any way, in an arrogant way. I just mean you could literally feel everybody's hands behind the steamroller pushing, and it was like, we're not stopping. And that was kind of the mindset.
Now, Jenny, on our normal show here, we've lost our live viewer, our listeners, so we're going to continue on just a little bit longer here with the podcast and give the people that are listening a little bonus time here. Let me ask you, you get into the NCAA, you're in there with that SEC championship. I mean, do you look, I mean, and I approached it, you know, when I was coaching, that was the whole idea, was to just get to the playoff system. The whole season was built in getting to the playoffs. Is that similar to your style?
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody wants to get into the playoffs. You know, I think, you know, most people, that's their, you know, sometimes even an unspoken, you know, expectation, and certainly the administration, you know, that's a big one. I mean, they want you to get to the playoffs or the postseason. That's always a goal for us, and winning the SEC West has always been a goal for us. But now it's changed. It's getting to the Sweet 16 is not that wasn't the goal before, but that's more okay. That's the standard. That's definitely the expectation. And then, you know, this year we got to the Elite Eight. We got to the quarters and lost to, you know, North Carolina. They ended up losing in the finals to UCLA. And, you know, hosting the kickoff weekend every year is the expectation now, the standard. And going to national team indoors in February is kind of the standard now. So, you know, the bar just kind of keeps getting lifted higher and higher. And I think it comes from being at Alabama because we're surrounded by champions. I mean, in one year we won 5 national championships at Alabama. You know, this year we won, we won men's golf. We won an SEC championship in men's golf, women's tennis, gymnastics. What other? Softball. We played for a national championship in softball. That's the culture here at Alabama. So it's a contagious spirit, and it's a high bar for everybody in every sport. And it's contagious. It's infectious.
And Jenny, as a bonus for you and I, when we started all this, I mean, we really had no idea how well your team was going to do, but you had a doubles team that secured the ultimate prize at the NCAA level.
They sure did, and it was amazing. I mean, just absolutely amazing. I mean, played with a lot of confidence in the final match against Lauren Herring and Maho Kouassi. They were ranked number one in the nation, they were ranked number two in the nation. We beat them in the final championship match for the national championship. And we dropped only 13 points in the entire match. And 4 of those points, it was incredible. I mean, our number one doubles team was as good as it gets. And after the match, the Georgia coaches said that our number one doubles team was hands down the best team in the tournament, and there's no comparison. And that was verbatim. You know, their head coach at Georgia, Jeff Wallace, compared it to throwing a perfect game as a pitcher, and it is the ultimate prize. You know, it was hard earned, a lot of diligence, a lot of hard work, a lot of figuring things out, a lot of maturity. You know, in the quarterfinals, we beat a very tough Miami team that was ranked. I believe they were ranked 5 in the country or 8 in the country, a very good team. It was Miami's number one team. We beat them in 3 sets, and we struggled big time. And after that match, I really challenged our number one team, and I said, you know, that I didn't want to get in the way of them, but that they had to make some changes, and that they were going to have to change their mentality and change the way they played together. And, I mean, this was in the quarterfinals of the NCAAs. So I guess the moral of the story is that you're always, you know, you're always trying to make things better and find better ways to do things, no matter, even if you're winning. Because if you're, you know, if you kind of just play well enough or you're content, then you're not going to grow, you're not going to advance, you're not going to improve. And credit to them, they made the changes. And I'll tell you, once they made those changes, they were off and running.
Kenny, I mean, what kind of coaching advice do you give a team that only loses 13 points in a match?
Well, you stay out of their way. Kind of like Mack Brown when he was coaching Vince Young in the national championship game, he said sometimes you just kind of have to know when to get out of their way. But, you know, we had already played that number one team from Georgia twice. We'd beaten them 8-2 and 8-3, so we had kind of established the way that we wanted to play, and it was a very aggressive, all-court kind of just authoritative way, which luckily we're able to execute and play that way. But, you know, we script plays for them. We do a lot of doubles individuals where we just, you know, bring in the two players by themselves, and we work on doubles the whole time. I feel like they were well prepared, and then to their credit, I think they really made some changes just with the way they communicated with each other. But we have some very distinctive, you know, like distinct plays that because we knew the team so well, you know, we had scouted them well because we'd seen them a lot, and I think we matched up with them well, and we served really well, we returned really well. So, you know, I think at a top position when you serve and return really well, and then you're able to move off of first balls and be really aggressive, you know, good things are going to happen.
And, Jenny, in your years there at Alabama, well, I know that as coaches we don't like to compare and contrast different years, but, I mean, this has to be one of those memorable years for all the time you've been there with the success.
Well, it is. I mean, there's no question, Jason. I mean, there were so many firsts. From winning an SEC championship to beating Florida for the first time to, I think, going 12-1 in conference and winning 26 or 27 matches for the first time in program history to, you know, to making the Elite Eight, to winning the national championship. I mean, it just, you know, it kind of went on and on where we just every time we turned around, we were doing something that we hadn't done the year before or we had never done in program history. And I mean, you know, it was so exciting, and at the same time, it kind of made you hungry to take the next step, to do something a little bit, you know, a little bit better. It kind of feeds off of, you know, you want to be undefeated in the SEC. And at one point, we were, you know, when we went in to play Vanderbilt, we both. Trying to think if Vanderbilt was undefeated at the time. You know what? Vanderbilt was undefeated at the time, and so were we. I was trying to remember if they had a loss, but they had just beaten Georgia, and we had just beaten Florida, and we played Vandy at Vandy, and that was just, you know, we were both tied for first, and, you know, that was going to be to see who took over at first. And so there were a lot of exciting things like that, and, of course, most of them fell our way. A few of them didn't, but what I like about our team is that every time we had a loss, we responded really well, really well. And I think that was really encouraging.
Jenny, how many seniors do you lose?
We just lost one senior. We lost Marianne Baines, who was our number one player from Ogden, Utah. And, you know, she did a great job for us. She will leave a lasting legacy at Alabama. I've continued to say that she's changed the face of our program. Marianne was an All-American in singles and doubles and was top 10 in the country in singles and was as high as number 2 in the country in doubles. She got to the Final Four of doubles last year with Alexa Garacci and became the winningest doubles combination, winningest doubles team in program history. And so, I mean, you know, that obviously is quite a loss, but at the same time, you know, we're gaining two more really good players and really good kids, one from Florida and one from Atlanta, Georgia.
Outstanding. Now, Jenny, being successful here, I know that you got to enjoy that championship and the exciting season for about 10 minutes, and then you get ready for next year. When do y'all start in the fall?
Well, we will get started right now. we're like, it really is true, Jason, because, I've been overwhelmed. I woke up at about 5:15 this morning, and, all I could think of was everything that I needed to do to work ahead and get things organized and get our player meetings out of the way, because we did camp last week, and, get everybody on the right, on the right trail for the summer. And, I guess it's like anything else, and I know I said this, you do have to strike a balance, and I do believe in that, and I big time believe in recovery as a player, as a coach, as a person. You can't work all the time, but when it's time to go, you do have to go. And so, I think part of our season will be defined with how much we play this summer, what the players are willing to go and do on their own this summer with training and playing matches and playing tournaments and putting themselves in pressure situations, because that's how you get better. Oftentimes, our players like to just go and hit cross-court forehands. Well, I can go out and hit cross-court forehands and look pretty good, but put me in a pressure situation where I've got to move and problem solve and I have stress. Now it's a lot different. So we had a great season, but we got a lot of work to do if we want to be good again. And, I think we're hungry to try to go beyond the Elite Eight, and I think we can, but we got a lot of work in front of us.
Well, Jenny, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today, and you tell a great story, and I know you've got many more stories to come, and I hope that in the future you'll come back on the show.
I would love to. I appreciate your time and your interest, and maybe we could do a part two next time.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot left to talk about, and I look forward to talking about your upcoming year. It sounds like you're going to be right back here next year, Jenny.
Well, I hope so, and I'm optimistic. I think we can be, and again, it's just, I think the commitment level is there. We've got the depth. We've got the leadership and the experience and the momentum from this season. So, I feel like things are certainly in good place, but Jason, as well as I do, because you coached a long time, that you and I can both sit behind our desks and think that, but there's a lot of things that kind of have to fall into line, and one of them is just plain good old, steadfast mentality, hard work, get after it on those hot summer days, and get out on the courts when maybe you'd rather be in the air condition. So we'll see if the tide is up, if the Crimson Tide is up for it.
Yeah. Jenny, I always let my coaches give out their website address and email in case somebody listens to the show and wants to contact them if you're up for it.
Sure. Well, our website, which is really informative, they do a great job with our social media and our website. It's, of course, www.rolltide, and it's just like it sounds, roll, R-O-L-L, tide, T-I-D-E, .com, and that is the Alabama Athletic website, and then obviously just go on to women's tennis. It's got our schedule, it's got everything, and bios and stats and everything, and tells a pretty good story. And then my email, if anyone would like to reach out to me, individually, is jmines, M-A-I-N as in Nancy, Z as in zebra, at ia.ua.edu.
Yeah. Well, Jenny, like I said, it's been a blast talking to you today. I'm glad we finally caught up with each other, and I want to wish you a great summer.
Thank you. You too, Jason. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, and go hit some tennis balls every once in a while, young lady.
I will. I'll try to get out there.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Roll Tide.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Ginny Mine. Ginny, what I love about Ginny, Ginny is a Texan first. That's what I love, and we got a great connection there. She coaches one of the premier NCAA Division I women's programs in the United States of America, and she is continuing to grow that program. And that, you know, after being there since 1997, you can hear just the childlike attitude in Ginny's heart. And I think that's reflected with her team. And what I love about it is she's still trying to figure it out. You know, she's very humble in her approach. She doesn't quite admit to knowing it all, and that's great because she's still trying to figure out how to get those kids to own that program. And I think that's what's driving Alabama to the top of women's tennis, getting as high as number two this year, getting that women's doubles championship at the NCAA level. Really an outstanding group of kids. And like she said, she only loses one player off that team, so there could be a lot of great results coming from that program in the future. Good things coming from Alabama, that's for sure. Now, on next week's show, we're going to have Derek Rantine on the show. Derek from the University of West Florida. Derek's Division II men won their respected title out there, and we'll be interviewing him. So I'm looking forward to having Derek on the show. He's done a great job out there, and we're so excited to have him on. So listen in for that. And like I said to Ginny, please get out there and go hit some tennis balls, people. It's a great time to do it. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.